The history of lynching from the colonial era to the present, and when, you know, and people may find that interesting. We still have cases of lynching in America, don't we?
Certainly not in the traditional sense that you have large mobs that publicly execute people in broad daylight and then get away with it. This is a thing of the past. But what I'm tracing in my book is what I call the transition from lynching to hate crime. And hate crimes are often crimes in which the perpetrators act upon the tradition of lynching, mm-hmm. but they no longer have the support and the protection of larger communities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's, you know, what's also, those who oppose hate crimes use the same argument that those who opposed anti-lynching laws. And that is that when hate crime legislation was introduced, their argument was, one, it's a state right issue. Two, a crime is a crime. And to add hate crime would, in essence, be like double crime. I mean, if someone, and I imagine that would have been the argument during the anti-lynching debates, murder is murder, so why add on top of it lynching?
Well, the opponents of hate crime legislation argued that it is a violation of the First Amendment and its protection of free speech.
Well, that is the other argument, right?
Because right. Because it, on top of a crime, punishes speech. But I think that's a facetious and mm-hmm. disingenuous argument, because it ignores the impact, the message that
I was going to say the motive.
But mm-hmm. also ignores the tremendous impact that such a law has in sending a message that it is not okay to kill people for what they are. It is not okay to commit violent acts because you hate Black people, because you hate homosexuals and other minorities. In contrast to anti-lynching bills, however, the hate crime legislation passed relatively quickly and relatively smoothly.
Eugene, Upper Marlboro, Maryland, your question for Professor Manfred Berg. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen, and enjoying the conversation.
Good morning.
Two questions, the first which we hear lynching a lot. But I have a question. What actually constituted the lynching, and were there variations? And then secondly, how prevalent was the castration that took place, and why do you think that was, based on your research?
Well, anti-lynching activists, they squabbled for a long time to come up with a workable definition of lynching. And I think what constitutes a lynching is, at least this is the definition that I use in my book, is the perpetration of a public murder by a community that meets out justice outside the law and also has the expectation to get away with it. So it's a mob or a group of people, and it is the idea that justice is done. The castration question, it is difficult to say how prevalent it was, but it happened particularly in cases that were, in lynching cases that were connected to charges of rape. That was clearly, and there is no reason to explain this, there was clearly the message, we will castrate rapists. Those were highly publicized cases, of course.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. 1-866-801-8255. In terms of Emmett Till, We know one of the reasons that lynching And I guess we could refer to it as a lynching?
Well,
or not?
Well, I think it's a typical borderline case.
Why do you say that?
Because what you don't have is a mob. It's two people. They kill Emmett Till. They abduct him. They kill him in the dead of night. Mm-hmm. Let's say the whole affair happened in 1954. If it had happened in 1924, mm-hmm. we would have had a real lynching in the sense that there would have been a group of people that would have taken him out mm-hmm. of his home or the home of his great grand uncle, mm-hmm. and they would have killed him. They would have lynched him in a spectacle lynching, probably.
As opposed to the dead of night
and that type of thing.
And there wouldn't have probably been a trial.
There would certainly not have been a trial. Now, in the Till case, the murderers act from the lynching spirit, but they can no longer be sure that the community at large condones their action. Yes, they get acquitted eventually in a trial that doesn't deserve
and admit that they did kill him.
But nevertheless,
after the trial,
it is not, and I think what we need to understand is that lynching is something that we need a workable definition. It's not a moral judgment. It's not to say that someone who is murdered in a crime that we would not classify as a lynching, that this changes anything about the moral depravity of the perpetrators. For me, as a historian, it is very important to distinguish different types of crimes. But of course, our sympathy goes out to the victims all the same. Mm-hmm. So whether someone is a victim of a hate crime or of a lynching, in my view, does not involve a moral judgment. It's a matter of definition. We want to understand violence. We want to understand the conditions under which people are capable of committing such horrendous acts and get away with it. And the development after the Second World War is that the classic lynchings, so to say, will no longer be acceptable.
We're going to have to end there. We only have a minute. This hour went quickly, but it is one I wanted to have. The book is Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America, Manfred Berg. It is not a textbook by any means. I mean, you really I think this whole issue justice, and I so appreciate you coming in and spending this hour.
I appreciate you having me. It's a great privilege.
I do hope that people please go out and get it and read this book, Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America. We'll continue. We've got a busy hour coming up, so don't go anywhere. Madison with you here on The Power.
No money for a go there, Bill. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on.
Why don't you
hold on?
Hold on.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Why don't you
hold on?
Paul and Silas begin to shout. The jail doors open and they walked out.
Keep your eyes on the prize.